To whom is the verse talking to? In other words, they're advising somebody. Who are they talking to? Because it says the source of life is in the mouth of the righteous. Now, to whom is he speaking to? Is he speaking to the righteous? He knows the source of life. He spent years studying. So who are they telling this to, that the source of life is in the mouth of the righteous? They're talking again to beginners that wouldn't know this. Right? Okay. So we're talking to beginners, and we're telling them that the source of life is in the mouth of the righteous, and the mouth of the wicked conceals violence, and you shouldn't go to them. Which means that by nature I would make a mistake for some reason and go to the wicked. Okay? Now we have to ask, what do we mean by the source of life altogether? What is the source of life? Life, which everybody is guided by, is that there are certain basic principles, philosophies, that every human being really lives by a philosophy, whether they know it or not. For instance, let's say you would steal stamps because you're not afraid of getting caught, but you wouldn't go to a bank and rob because you're afraid of getting caught, right? So therefore, you have a certain philosophy of life that really stealing isn't wrong, but the only thing is the preservation of getting caught, because the fear of getting caught. So your philosophy is the chance, you should only do it when the chance of getting caught is very little. That's your philosophy of life. But he's not saying that stealing is wrong. The whole stealing is okay. The only thing is that stealing is okay only if you're not going to get caught, so you don't take any chances. So everybody, even though a person does not think of it as a philosophy, but everybody is guided by a philosophy of life. That is the source of life. Source of life is your philosophy that you're guided by. Realizing that everybody lives by certain ideas, certain premises that they don't even realize, and that you have to start checking out to see what these premises are to undo, the false ones anyway, and to allow the good ones to take root. That's what we're trying to do now by working out the true ideas. Saying that they're guided by these ideas, but they didn't speak it out. They don't even know what it is. I agree, but I agree with that, and I'm not saying that's what the verse is talking about, but I'm just trying to show you that people live by philosophies that are irrational. Okay? Now, when you have an irrational philosophy, it means that the source of that philosophy is not based on reality. Now the question is, if it's not based on reality, then where does it come from? To come from is from within you. Now what people do is that when they have certain emotions and desires and psychological motives, what they do is some people lift those psychological and unconscious philosophies, is they formulate a verbal philosophy out of it. But the verbal philosophy, what they actually verbalize, or what they write about, if you listen very, very carefully, and you analyze it and question it, as we have been questioning the verses here, you will see that it will not be able to stand up to reality, because the reason is that they've made an emotion into a philosophy. Philosophy of might makes right. Right? Everybody wants to win. Well, you see, the people, they're competitive, they want to win, and so they're stronger, if they're faster. They're always, you see, that might makes right is a powerful emotion. Now what people have done is they made it that emotion into a philosophy. The question is, can it stand up under questioning? Under analysis, will it stand up in the world, in the real world, in the world of ideas? I'm only trying to show you that everybody has a philosophy, and all these philosophies contradict each other. You know, some people hold that love, that's the whole thing, and other people hold that might makes right, and other people hold some other thing. How do you know which one is right? Everybody advocates. Well, some of them have to be wrong, and maybe they're all wrong. Maybe we don't have the right philosophy yet. But the only thing is, what I'm trying to say is, the false philosophies, where do they come from? They stem from within you. All your personal desires that you want to do, you put it in the form of a philosophy. This is telling the beginner. It says, if you have to find the tzaddik that will show you the true philosophy, because it's based on reality, a real analysis, a scientific analysis, where it stands up under all types of questions, where he himself has questioned his philosophy until he sees the truth. Just like we're analyzing to question these verses, after a while you start questioning things around you when you trained your mind to question. That'll be the test, to test out the different philosophies. You see? But for the beginner doesn't know this. So we have to warn the beginner that there's a lot of people that say very nice philosophies. That's what we're talking about, in the mouth of the wicked. They speak beautiful philosophies. But you have to be careful. The philosophy is the philosophy of their base emotions, their unconscious desires. You have to be very, very careful. It's not a real philosophy. It's a philosophy based on simply their emotions, where they lifted their emotions to the level of a philosophy. Congress people, right? Well, many times they put in terms of justice and what's right, because that's what the party line is. And it really, they just want to get their own personal advance in their own profession. So they say that which they think will advance them. But they don't say that to the public. They put it in terms of justice and righteousness, what's beneficial for the government. That's what people call politics. You see? So the thing is that people, what they do, people make a philosophy from their emotions. All violence, because first of all it's violent because they're destroying, or if you have the wrong philosophy, so then you're being destroyed, and it comes from their base emotions. All base emotions are basically evil. The base emotions are evil in the human. The human has to work it out through thought and through study and through understanding till they find a true philosophy. Now we're telling the beginner, what we're doing is telling the beginner that that you have to be careful about who you learn your philosophy from. Until you learn how to really test it out and check it out, just go to the righteous and learn philosophy. Don't go to the wicked to learn philosophy. Later on, once you know how to analyze and test things out, then you can go listen and start questioning them. You see? But the thing is you must recognize that anybody that does something, most of the times they give a philosophy why they're right. Sounds very smooth. But if it's an irrational philosophy, you should know it's only to conceal their really a desire to satisfy their base emotions, and they're lifting their base emotions up to the level of a philosophy. But it's not philosophy. The way we understand philosophy is it's simply to recognize what is real. The only way you can test what is real is the way we analyze a verse here. We question it and analyze it until we can put it together until it makes total sense. But the thing is that the wicked is they speak to the emotions, and you're drawn in, and your conscious mind doesn't question. On the contrary, if you did question, they'd get very upset with you. A person's philosophy is really basically his emotions. So when you start questioning him and showing him that, hey, just one minute, this doesn't sound right, and they get very angry. A person should want to analyze their philosophy to check it out to see if it's really correct. Why are you getting angry? You see?
Well, then they. Yeah.
Means the base emotions, the unconscious emotions of the human being. It's basically a violent place. Okay? I don't want to get into the area of where it stems from, or how it works. But the thing is, all I am saying is the basic, and the Torah says that a person is born wild, meaning that the base instincts of the human being is more animalistic, wild, and you see all the base emotions when people live according to their base emotions, and just let go, it usually leads to violence or promiscuous sex. So the thing is, it's just wild things. So the thing is, but the thing is, what people do is lift this thing to a whole philosophy of life. And they say it's right because they're justified with a philosophy of life. You see? That's what you have to be careful of. He does not know how to protect himself from false philosophies. Should go to the righteous and learn how to think. Should get the right philosophy and also be trained how to think so that he could test out the incorrect philosophies. You see? Then you can listen to these people, to the righteous. I mean, to the wicked. You can listen to the wicked and but analyze it. But before your mind is ready to analyze, you should be very, very careful. You should at least know that the truth is in the mouth of the righteous and the true philosophy of life that will most benefit you in this world is in the mouth of the righteous and not in the mouth of the wicked. And you can see that for yourself in time when you've learned to question and how to analyze and to test things out. As a beginner, know the difference between the righteous and the wicked. How can he doesn't know? He could be fooled. I haven't figured that out yet, how the beginner does that. I don't know. There must be a way. But I don't know it yet. The first now on this verse is, what is the subject of the verse? Okay? The comment was made that when the discussion got so far from the verse that suddenly, where's the verse come in? The answer is that you're right. Sometimes the discussion moves along to get clarity in a certain area, and you lose sight of the verse. But however, and when in the final analysis, you should always come back to the verse and say, now, after all this discussion, after everything is said and done, what does the verse mean? And does it fit into the words? If according to Torah, is always ideas. So the source of life is definitely ideas. Okay? That's the source of life. Okay? Now, the true ideas means that you're explaining what is reality, and you try to get your life in line with that reality. While the wicked, what they do is they make a philosophy out of their emotions. It has nothing to do with reality. They look at reality through their emotions, and they make a philosophy on their feelings, how they feel about life. Then they verbalize it and put it and make it into a philosophy. That is the wicked, okay? Since the source of life means a philosophy, and the true source of life is in the mouth of the righteous, then the mouth of the wicked must mean their philosophy. Now, where does their philosophy come from? It comes from their wickedness, namely their unconscious violence or desires, their unconscious desires, and it's represented by violence. But it means their base emotions, what they want to live, so they build a whole philosophy out of it to make it the correct thing. The source of life is the correct way of living. So okay? I must see that people are guided by philosophies. But there are two sources. See, the source of life means that it's really based on an idea. Any person that lives a certain type of life or they do certain things, you see, you could always, by their actions, you could define what their philosophy of life is. You see? So therefore, there's two sources to philosophy. Either it's based on reality, that's the real source of life, that's in the mouth of the righteous. But the mouth of the wicked, their philosophy stems from their base emotions. That's what it means, conceals violence, because the violence is in their base emotions. Then they make a whole philosophy out of that. Right. Might doesn't make right. But they make a whole philosophy out of their desire to use violence to be successful and to control other people. So they write a whole philosophy about it. The verse is saying, it's telling the beginner that every life, every action, and every way of life that a person lives is based on ideas. It's based on ideas. What you base your life on, the ideas that you base your life on, that we call a philosophy. That is philosophy of life. Okay? And what we're saying is that you have to be very, very careful. There's certain philosophies that are based on reality that the mind could see and test out scientifically that it is true. And there's certain philosophies that are based totally on their emotions, but they put it in a philosophy of life. You see? So the subject matter is philosophy. The philosophy of life, or a way of life. Or like the verse says, the source of life. For whatever it is, it's an idea. Now there are two ways you could formulate your philosophy. You could formulate it based on reality and a true search for reality, like we analyze every single part of the verse and question it, or it's just that you have certain feelings that you want to live a certain life. So you don't say, well, I feel like murdering people. What you do is you make a philosophy out of it, like might makes right, or some other type of philosophy like that. You see? So you make a philosophy based on your emotions. So what the pasuk is saying, what the verse is saying, is that you have to be very, very careful, since every lifestyle is based on a philosophy. You must be very careful of these different philosophies, especially when people advocate, and they're good speakers, and they can advocate a certain philosophy. Hey, that sounds right. But it's not right until you tested it out, exactly the way you're being trained to question these verses. And that will train you to question and to test out the different philosophies to see if they can be acceptable or not. I want to say that based on this idea, that we can now have a definition of righteous and wicked. I want to say that righteous is a person that guides his life by a reality. This reality is tested out through scientific method until it's shown that it is 100% correct. While the wicked is a person that lifts his base emotions to the level of a philosophy. That is what the wicked are. And, chapter 10, verse 12, that hatred awakens arguments or quarrels, and love covers all faults. What is hatred? What is love? And what is the relationship? Are they opposites, hatred and love, or what are they? Is how does hatred stir, awaken quarrels or starts quarrels? And how does love cover transgressions or faults? Okay. Is the verse talking about hatred and love as an emotional phenomenon, or is it some type of a logical phenomenon? Another thing, which side, usually they have which is the good side and which is the bad side, you know, which is evil and which is good. Here they don't mention which is evil and which is good, they just mention the love and hate, and they don't help us out too much. Says, let's take up what is hate, okay? What do we mean by hate, okay? Let's say, for instance, somebody does me harm, okay? Now the question is, how do I deal with it? I have to deal with it in a very, very practical manner. There are one or two possibilities. Either I can protect myself or I can't protect myself. That's all. If I cannot protect myself, then I have to accept the reality. That's it. There's nothing I can do. If I can't protect myself, then I should protect myself. I should protect myself. I have a right and an obligation to protect myself from any transgression that somebody has against me. But however, that is not the usual way the way people relate. What happens is that within them they have a tremendous amount of anger. And the situation allows the anger its expression. In other words, hate is anger waiting for the right situation to explode in. So it's always looking for that. Hate is always looking for an argument. That's what the verse is saying. And it just needs the right situation, and it doesn't take much to open up the floodgates and let it just all pour out. Like you said before, it's in terms of vengeance and harming others and in gossiping about others and looking at fault. It's just a matter of the right situation to bring it out. That's hatred. Has a certain amount of hatred and aggression within them, and it's always there. It is there in everybody. It's a normal human trait. Love, really, you have to be careful here that most love is a fear of looking at your own hatred. In other words, it's really not a positive. It's really a negative. In other words, like this. Those people that look at everybody in a good light, everybody is good, is because they don't want to see their own hatred. And the way they cover their own hatred is they cover it in everybody. I'll soon give you another illustration. Excuse me, just let me finish. And the thing is that that's one type. Then also, for instance, when a person falls in love, right? So there's a strong identification, so you don't want to see their problems either, because it'd be like seeing your own problems, you see? And then at the time of the Holocaust, people did not believe what the Nazis were doing, you see? I think is that people did not want to believe that such a thing is possible in human nature, because once it's possible in human nature, then it's possible for me to be like that too. And that's why they denied even the possibility of such a thing. Negative It's not that it's negative. I'm not saying it's negative. I'm saying, but its purpose is to protect yourself to a large extent from seeing the evil within you. You see? People look at it as a positive, like an objective thing is love. It's an emotional thing. And you have to put it in terms of the emotions. And the emotions are simply that its purpose is to make sure that you don't see evil, either in everybody or in certain people that you identify with. So you don't want to see evil in them. The person feels for another person is because they identify with them. There's a certain identification with them. Okay? Now, just like in yourself that you hide faults within yourself, in other words, you don't want to see your own faults, so because you identify with somebody, so you don't see their faults either. Whoever you'll identify with, so therefore you will not see their faults. In that way, I mean, in other words, love is really some type of identification. You see, that you identify with this person on a very strong emotional level, you see? But however, but just like when you identify with somebody, you will cover, just like on yourself, you try to hide from yourself your own faults, so you will hide it from others. You will hide the faults of the person that you identify with. One thing, there is a love that comes as a result of knowledge. Maimonides, at the end of his Guide for the Perplexed, which is a very abstract philosophical book, he says, at this point you'll truly love people. Okay? In other words, there's a certain love that comes as a result of your knowledge of God. Mm-hmm. It's a very high level. But the emotions fall in line with your ideas. And that love is a true love of a person. The love that we were talking about in the verse is a love that everybody is born with, that everybody has. When they have that love, that's the nature of love. But there is a love that comes, it's a certain feeling that comes as a result of a very high level of knowledge of God. When you have that knowledge of God, then you relate to people emotionally via God, and so therefore you have a love of people via... I can't go into detail exactly how it works. It's a little difficult, and it's very far from the verse. But I just want you to know that it's not that we do not hold from love. It is love, but love is the love that we advocate is a result of your knowledge of Torah. The love that a person feels must come through identification. And since you identify with the person, so therefore, just like you're going to cover, you hide your own faults, even from yourself, people hide their own faults from themselves, so will you try to cover from yourself the faults of somebody you are in love with. Question, what is the subject of the verse? Right? What is the subject? Be hatred or love. Hatred and love are opposites. Okay? They're two opposites of the spectrum. Hatred comes from total lack of identification. I have all this anger within me ready to come out. While love comes from a cover up of the anger, right? So the two opposites, okay? Now the question is, since they're two opposites, they must be opposites in something. Every opposite must be an opposite in something. So if it's an opposite in something, the question is, what is it an opposite? First, you have to understand there are two ways of relating to other people. One is rational and one is emotional. Rational, I relate very practically, like we started off in saying, the practical thing, somebody does me harm or somebody's going to harm me, then I just analyze the best way to protect myself and I have the right to do that. And I protect myself in the best possible way. Okay? That's practical. It has nothing to do with my emotions, how I feel about the person. But however, the emotional way of relating to people is one of two ways. Either I'm looking for a fight, or I'm looking to cover up faults just to get out of a fight. Somebody said, well, I don't feel these ideas. I mean, I don't feel what you're saying. And the truth is that when you start on a rational approach to life, you're going to find that most of the ideas are not in line with your emotions. And all you could be happy at the beginning is that your mind sees it.
and that you try to live according to it as best as you can. But then as you continue in all your studies and thought and training your mind to think, then after a while your emotions will come in line with your ideas. Okay? So you can't expect when you see an idea like this to say, well, yeah, I feel that way. No, we don't feel that way. We definitely don't. And it takes a long time for it to become real to us, an idea like this. And I'm saying, but it does kind of take time until going over the different, not only this idea, but as you get into more and more ideas and you see things rationally, then that in itself, just the idea, just that it's clear to the mind, will affect your emotions. I would advise you to, if you have the ability to think about one idea, I would say that's the best thing, because the thing is when you think about an idea, but not just to think about it, but to see if you could find questions, let it roll around in your mind, try to look at it from different angles, see even if you could find questions, and through the analysis and through the training and through the thinking about it, slowly but surely through the years, that type of clear thinking, as it becomes clear to the mind, then that affects the emotions. It's not the quantity of ideas that bring you close to God. It's the quality of the ideas, of how clear it is to your mind, and then how much it affects your emotions. How much it affects your emotions is a barometer of how real the ideas are to you. Because of the questions that are being asked, I would like to explain one thing. And that is, according to Torah, a human being is born wild. What I mean by wild is his basic nature is evil. Okay? And the thing is, the only way to straighten that nature out is through knowledge. Through the knowledge of Torah and through guidance, so that you find the truth. And through the truth, the human being is different than any other animal in the world. Any other animal was created that its basic nature is to protect itself. To protect at least the species. The human being's emotions are basically to destroy itself. And if you look around you, you will see that we're destroying ourselves. Okay? So the thing is, the only way to get away from this is to undo, through rationale, to be guided by rationale, how to live your life. And that is the basic foundation of Proverbs, is to give you the basic foundation of how to guide your life on a rational basis. One of the problems that a person has is that we're using good and evil, and a person has his own view of good and evil. And because of that, when he hears these ideas, so he gets confused because of his old ideas of good and evil, and from what we're saying now, somehow it does not fit in with that. So the best working definition that we can deal with here is that, just say that evil is ignorance. Evil is ignorance. We're not going to deal... Of course, there's a lot of emotions that tell us what to do, but basically, evil is ignorance. And you need the Torah to teach you the correct way of looking at it. And when you see it in the Torah light, then you will see the reason why we say that evil is ignorance, because you'll see that it's just a lack of knowledge about the world that you could actually see in the world, and you'll see it from these verses. Of the emotions start from infancy, from the way you're trained. You see, so you get you have a view of good and evil, but that idea of good and evil is an infantile view. So you do have an idea, a vague idea of good and evil. What you have to do is straighten that idea of good and evil out with the knowledge of Torah. Verse 13, and it says, "The lips of the thinker, in the lips of the thinker, you will find wisdom, and the stick to the back fool," but literally it's lacks wisdom. Okay? Thinker, you will find wisdom, and the stick to the back of a fool, or person who lacks wisdom, lacks knowledge. Okay? Now, we're going to analyze this verse in two ways. Okay? We're going to have two different verses, okay, two different proverbs. One is, in the lips of the thinker, comma, you will find wisdom, comma, and a stick to the back of a fool. The second way is, in the lips
of a thinker you will find wisdom, comma, and a stick to the back of a fool.
We said that in the lips of a navon, of a wise person, comma, you will find wisdom and a stick to the back of a fool, or literally a person that lacks any type of knowledge. Questions? Who's a thinker? Okay. We are not. This verse will not define a thinker, so we will not try to define it. We'll have to wait for a verse that clearly defines what a thinker is. You see, so then we will deal with thinking. But the question is a good one, but we'll have to keep that question and wait for a verse that deals with a thinker. Stick to the back of a fool means verse where there's a comma after the words the lips of a wise person or intelligent person. The problem is that when a thinker talks, and he talks wisdom, right? So some people will find wisdom in it, and to some people that statement will be like a stick to his back, okay? Now, stick to his back certainly does not mean literally. When a person says, as a person is only speaking, you can't say stick literally, you see? So it must be that the stick to the lips, stick to the back must be a metaphor, okay, representing some type, something, whatever it represents. But it is when there's certain people, when they listen to the lips of an intelligent person, to a wise person, to a person that's giving, like, knowledge of proverbs, right? So the thing is to some people, that knowledge is like a stick to his back. Metaphor. That's the first problem that we have to deal with. The reality is that that a stick to the back is one is a punishment, possibility that it's a punishment, or two, that it is a way of goading him to get him going, to goad him on. Okay. Now the thing is that we know is sifsei navon, the lips of a wise person speaks intelligence. You see. So therefore, we're not talking about where he's talking to the fool, like lecturing the fool or telling the fool to be good. He is talking wisdom. Therefore, certain people will find wisdom in it. See, if it's a stick to his back means punishment, you see, then it would not apply to the first half that he would find wisdom in it. Because if it's a punishment, the guy that accepts wisdom doesn't need a punishment. So therefore, the very words that one person will find wisdom, truth, that very words will be a stick to the back of a fool. The problem, how would it be a stick? How is the words a stick? If it's a punishment, he's telling them off, or he's goading them on, whatever it is, so then I understand, it's painful. But if the very same words is wisdom to one person, how could those, you're just listening to a lecture and ideas, truth. How could those very words be, the very same words, will be a stick to the back of? It's the lips of the wise person, that's like a speaker. Right. Now, in the group that is listening to it, right, to him, there will be some that will find wisdom, and there will be some that will be a stick to their back.
Right.
You see? Those are the listeners, okay? So there's two types of people, how they relate, just to wisdom, not to rebuke, to wisdom, to ideas, to truth. The words become a rod to beat somebody as if it was beating him on the back, to certain people when they hear this wisdom. The question is why? In this verse, is really how people relate to truth. Okay? Truth or reality. Okay? There's two ways of relating to truth. One way is I see it for what it is. Like, let's say, for instance, you know that if you come to a street corner, you have to stop and look both ways. You see? A child, when he comes to a street corner and looks both ways, it's because he's obeying his parents. You see? And to him, he's only answering to authority, and he doesn't want to relate to authority, you see? So to a lot of people, truth is simply an authority, you see? That's one way of looking at it. Truth is truth, reality, many times interferes with our life, you see? And the thing is that that's why people have ways of dealing with reality in very funny ways. They keep changing it around because it interferes, you see? So they keep changing it around, and this reality becomes really an authority, you see, that you don't want to accept. You don't want to accept this reality. It's like a demand because your mind doesn't see it, and your emotions are going in a very different way, in a very different place, you see? So therefore, when reality comes in, it's like you want to go one way, and the authority is telling you to go the other way. See, to a person that's the first half, the first person, when he hears reality, it might run against his emotions, but he sees it as reality. When we tell you you have to live a certain type of life, and we show you clearly every step, you say, yeah, I have to do it, but I don't like it, but I have to do it. I see it. But to the other person, to the second half, to the fool, he really doesn't see the truth. So therefore, when reality hits him, he looks at it as some authority forcing him to do something. You see? So when the intelligent person gets up and goes step by step and says, this is truth, this is reality, and it affects his life, he just looks at the person as some authority telling me what to do. You see, he looks at that person as just telling me something what to do. You see? So therefore, he looks at him just as an authority, not a reality. Once you look at somebody as an authority, and the authority is forcing you to do something, so then it's like a stick to your back. It's like he's forcing you. Do not know the harm of the reality, why they have to look both ways, and why they can't walk in the street. When they stop, it's because they're obeying their parents. They want to go on, they want to run free, but their parents stop them, they'll get punished. So therefore they stop. Now anybody that has to stop because they're just going to be punished can't be very happy with it, you see? So therefore when the wise person tells over wisdom, and that wisdom affects the way you look at life, or that wisdom affects the way you're going to act in life, or the way you're going to deal in life, it affects you. Since you don't, if you see it as wisdom, so then then you accept it. It might be difficult, but you accept it. But if you don't see the ideas and you don't accept it as wisdom, then you only accept it as an authority telling you what to do.
Is it possible?
Authority, you want to do one thing, and the authority is telling you to do the other. Some people look at reality in a wrong way. They'll tell you, I mean, the whole philosophies are built on wrong philosophies. Why? Because they want to look at life in a certain way, and they don't let reality interfere with their views of life. You see? They just want to look at life in a certain way, and reality is only an interference. Just to stop them, so they have to deny reality somehow. Now, the same thing, if it's a person that's telling you, how much more so? Oh, boy, forget it. I mean, who wants to listen to him? Becomes an authority telling me what to do. The intelligent person, what he's telling you to do. Now, if you don't listen to him, then you are not acting in line with reality. You see? So reality itself you don't accept. You don't accept reality because you don't act in line with it. So you're not accepting reality. Now, so it's going to have to interfere at some point. So therefore, you ever see a kid, he runs into a table, and he gets angry with the table, like the table did something. You see, he looks at reality as something interfering. He's angry with it. Why do you interfere with me? Why do you hurt me? You see? So he blames the authority. That's the authority stopping him. Causes pain. You see? So the thing is the same thing. That's the fool. The fool is, he may be an adult, but insofar as the ideas of Proverbs, which are more abstract, he relates to the world in that same infantile manner. The world just gets in his way. You know what I mean? When you start out, you accept that sage as an authority. But however, after you study them and you start understanding, it becomes clear to the mind, then you say, look, they're explaining what reality is. And now that I see it, so I'm just going to do it. You see? And then I thought, it was Bachi Ibn Pakuda, the author of Duties of the Heart, gives an illustration, an illustration for a different purpose, but it might help us. He says, if you're in a room, dark room, blackout, and you are not familiar with it, whichever which way you walk, you're going to bang into it. You're going to bang into furniture because you're not familiar. But if they would give you a little flashlight, and you put that on, you would never bump into anything. You see? Now the thing is, people relate to reality in the same way. Since they do not have the knowledge of Proverbs, or the knowledge of Torah, all areas of Torah, so they relate to life in an incorrect manner. And so therefore they keep banging themselves and getting banged all over, and they keep denying it. And they keep going on, they live with their own philosophy. But if they put on a light, which means that they had the truth, their mind would see the truth. That's right? Their mind would see the truth, so then immediately they would bang into anything. They'd have to do what is correct. That the verse is talking about a wise person that's speaking. I've also attached it, this verse, also to the idea how people relate to reality itself. See, because the words of the wise person is reality. So, but when there's a wise person, they attach it to the person. But also people, when it comes to reality, they can't take reality. So what they do is they change their opinion of reality. They have a whole different philosophy to change around reality. But it's the same, the reason is the same reason, because truth and reality is just a big pain in the neck to them. It's just like a big stick hitting them in the neck. It just stops them from doing everything they truly desire to do and want to do. They have desires for one thing, and truth tells them, if you live that way, you're going to hurt yourself. And they don't want to hear that. They don't want reality interfering with their life. That is that in the lips of a wise person you can find wisdom, period. And then they stick to the back of a fool. Okay? Subject to the verse. What does one side have to do with the other? You understand, right? That's the main question. The objective, I believe, is to get a person to do an act. To do an act. If you want an intelligent person to do an act, speak to him and tell him why. Explain to him why he should do the act. And then he will do the act. You see? There's some people, the only way you can get him to do an act is by giving him a stick to his back, literally. Force him. That's the only way. Pressure. He could take a certain amount of pain, and that's it. And in other words, you could either talk, a person will do the correct act in one of two ways. Either you talk to him correctly and show him rationally why you should do the correct act. That's one type of person. Right? In a wise person, right? In the lips of a wise person, you'll find wisdom. Meaning that will cause you to do an act. The other type of person, the only way to get him to do an act is not with your lips, but with a stick. You see, the first half is the lips of a wise person will get you to do, you will find wisdom. You'll get him to do an act. You'll get him to do the correct act. But however, in the second way, the only thing that will get him to do an act is the stick. But, where do I see that in the first half of the verse? Okay? The thing is that it's true that if I just had the first half of the verse by itself, okay? It would say the lips of a wise person you will find wisdom, right? Okay? That can mean many things. Definitely, I wouldn't think of that it means to get me to do an act. Okay? But however, because I have the second half and I don't know how they fit in, there is only one way that I see that these two things can fit in. In the lips of a wise person you will find wisdom to do the correct act. And that correct act, you see, if you want somebody else that is not wise to do the correct act, then you must force him. That's a stick to his back, to the fool, who cannot accept that. In other words, in other words, the first half of the verse does not exclude what I'm saying. It is a possibility. Now, you're saying there might be other possibilities. You are correct, if you only had the first half. But since I have the second half with the first half, so therefore I accept this possibility. The first half is broad, but the second half forces me to narrow it down. Okay? Repeat that. If the subject is to get somebody to do an act, there's two ways of getting people to do an act. One is through wisdom, and one is through force. The definition of discipline is simply how much pain could the student take or the child take before they do the correct act. That's all it is. Correctly, yes, you would have to be a wise person, but it wouldn't be from his lips. It will have to cause some type of punishment. But there are a lot of people that punish that don't know how to punish, and they get very bad results. Sometimes it's better if they didn't. They'd be better off. You have to know how to punish, when to punish, when it's going to backfire, and it's going to be worse than what you started out with. So you really have to know how to use a stick. Who should use a stick should also be a wise person. As an illustration for the person that you have to hit before he gives an act, does the act, he gives an illustration of Pharaoh, Paro. See, because he would not send the Jews out simply because God asked, and they proved to him that there was a God, and the proofs he wouldn't take. So since he wouldn't take the proofs, so God hit him with the plagues. It was only after the plagues that they got him to get going. So Rashi has that as an illustration of the second half of the verse. Treating the person that's a fool more like an animal. It's true. An animal will operate totally on pain. And the same thing with the human. He has a animal part of him, and he will get away from, at a certain point, the pain will force him to do the correct act. It has nothing to do with wisdom. When he's doing the correct act, it's only because of pain, just like an animal. There is no wisdom there. Wisdom should be, discipline should really only come through wisdom, as much as possible. Like when you train a child to cross the street, you should not tell him don't cross or we'll punish you. You should explain to him that crossing is a dangerous thing. Show him the reality. You see? If at all possible. But of course, if he won't listen, you don't want the kid to get hurt. So therefore, you have to put on force if he's not going to listen. You see? Is that in a society also, society can only be run through punishment. We can't wait for a murderer to stop the train and think him, and in 20 years maybe he'll become good, maybe he'll start thinking, and he'll stop murdering. The thing is, we have to have punishments, and therefore laws in a society is also a very practical thing to stop people from doing the correct act. If we cause them pain, so then they'll stop doing the incorrect act. Okay? But however, when a person does the correct act because he's afraid of punishment, that is not a perfected human being. What we mean by a perfected soul is we mean a person that does the correct act because his mind sees that this is the best way of living. That this is the rational, he sees it with his mind from step one to step 10. Straight down the line, he sees it clearly. That it is the correct way. And when you live according to your mind, that is the perfected soul. The 15. The wealth of a rich man is his strong city, comma. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. The wealth of a rich man is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. Yes, you're right. Poverty is the cause, and the destruction is the result. Take the verse literally, where wealth means money. Okay? Yeah, we're not going to take it metaphorically. We're going to take it literally, that it means money. What is a strong city? A city, we mean that it protects him. That money is a certain type of protection. That's what the verse is saying. Poor means that since they don't have any money, so if something goes wrong, they can't help themselves. They can't deal with it. Something goes wrong with my car, so a rich man will say, well, I'll go out and buy a new car, or I'll have it fixed. The poor man, before he can have it fixed, has to start worrying, where is he going to get the money from? So the rich man is protected by his wealth. The truth is that rich over here is singular in the Hebrew, and poor is plural. So the third question is why. I would say offhand because it's talking about probability. There's very few people that are rich, there's more people that are poor. Just talking about how things usually do occur. The question that we have to ask, and this verse is contrary to the whole philosophy of Proverbs. Because Proverbs says the only real protection in this world, the only way to be successful in this world is wisdom. And he constantly proves throughout that money is no real protection unless you have wisdom how to use it. But without wisdom, the wealthy man can destroy himself too. And his money won't be a protection for him. First, King Solomon is going against his basic philosophy in all that he writes in all of Proverbs. That all of Proverbs is the basis for to have the physical world is wisdom. And those people that are lacking in wisdom, or they have wisdom, but they have certain emotions that affect their thinking process, at that point they're going to fail. And now suddenly he says, wealth is the protection. What I have to say is, we're using the fortified city as an allegory. So the thing is that when a person is in a protected city, even if he's not wise, that situation is a good situation. It's true in the long run he'll fail, but what King Solomon is saying, he's observing the physical world, and he's saying there are certain things, there are certain situations where having money is beneficial, where having certain protection is beneficial even without wisdom. It's true the wise person will be successful whether he has this or not, he'll work it out, you see. But practically in the physical world, there are, without wisdom, certain situations that are better than other. Like, for instance, if you have money, like we said before, practically, there are many things you could do. If your car breaks down, you don't have to worry. You just buy a new car. You just have it fixed. You see? If you have a fortified city, so you will be protected. That situation, of course, if the enemy happens to have a certain amount of knowledge, then they will work out a way of breaking down the fortified city. But giving equal, you know, having a fortified city on one side and the enemy on the other, that is a certain situation that, given just the facts of the situation, that situation is a better situation than a non-fortified city. You see? So therefore, the thing is that all he is saying is when you look around the world, you will see that there are situations which are better than others. That's all he's saying. That's a fact of life. But he's not saying that is better than wisdom. He's not saying money is better than wisdom. But he says money has a certain advantage. Having a fortified city has a certain advantage over a non-fortified city. So the thing is that there's certain situations which, by definition, is just a better situation. But people have had very good situations and destroyed it because they didn't have the wisdom. They didn't know how to deal with it. You see? So therefore, his subject, what he's dealing with, is simply physical world without wisdom. That's it. There are situations which are better than others. That's all he's saying. To be rich and healthy than poor and sick. That's true. In general, is why is it that, like, one verse has nothing to do with the other verse, and he seems to be jumping from one subject to another subject, and one has nothing to do with the other? The answer is, in my opinion, is that this book was written for beginners. And a beginner it's very difficult to take a whole subject all at once. So therefore, that's why he made it into Proverbs. Proverb is one sentence with all the information and one aspect of a very large subject. You see? It's a large subject, or this area, and could be worked out in a logical form, but he took a different verses, and each one is a different idea, so that the beginner can handle and deal with very simple ideas and a very few facts, so that the beginner can develop his mind that way and start developing that way. Later on, he should take the whole subject of ethics. That would be like in the chapter of the fathers. It's there. It's written categorically, you know, what you need. It doesn't go in this much detail as in Proverbs. Because I think Proverbs was written for beginners. Therefore, there is no connection between one verse and the other.